Speaking of mining, I'm wondering how the both of you see transboundary mines, both the operational Red Chris mine as well as proposed mine projects in BC, affecting the Stikine and, by extension, Wrangell and its neighbors in the near future, in the next few years, and going forward into the further future. How about mines proposed in the Unuk watershed closer to Ketchikan? Do you think current transboundary mine agreements are enough to protect our natural resources should there be a failure? And I will start with Representative Ortez.
This is one of the biggest issues I engaged myself in when I first was elected. Went to Juneau, had a meeting with Lieutenant Governor Malotte, as well as Canadian mining officials, and we were addressing some of the concerns that you just spoke about in your question. You know, what can we do to protect the very, very valuable cultural resources that come out of these rivers, subsistence users, concerns with fishing like Ooligan, things like that. How can we protect the very valuable salmon runs that are up, going up these rivers annually, have gone up for generations. And at the same time, we were dealing with the challenge and have been dealing with the challenge that ultimately we're talking about areas with that's on Canadian soil, Canadian land, and it is their land. But that doesn't mean we can't do everything possible to protect those interests. And I've been engaged all along the process to try to do the best we can at protecting the interests that we have here in Southeast Alaska, whether it's the Stikine or the Unuk or other rivers. There are a number of planned projects on the Canadian side that we do need to try to keep track of, and we do need to have our voice at the table to do the best we can at protecting the long-term interests of our fishing industry and the cultural and traditional interests that people have had in relationship to these rivers for centuries on end. So do we need to do more? Absolutely. We need to do more to engage the U.S. State Department on the issue. I think our federal delegation is adequately and even more than adequately engaged on the issue. I would hope that they can engage this U.S. State Department to do a U.S.-Canadian dialogue on the issue rather than just a B.C.-Alaska dialogue on the issue. Do I think we have enough in place to protect us right now? No, I do not. And I will, if continue to be elected, have the opportunity to continue to serve, I will keep that as a forefront of my issues as far as trying to do the best we can in protecting our interests on these transboundary mines.
Thank you. Candidate Becker.
Yeah, transboundary mining is a great opportunity for the economy, but I think that we need to make sure that we are well, fully vetted on what's going on so we can, understand that it is Canadian land if those mines are being started up in. And we have to do our best to be able to protect our resources on this side of the border. I am fully in support. I would probably, I would be pretty much in lockstep of what Representative Ortez has said. We have to protect our resources. We have to work with our boundary partners. I know there's a lot of angst about mining on the border. You think of the Mount Polly dam failure and how that affected the salmon and things like that. There's all these historical issues that cause angst. And I believe that if we have the right partnership, not only on a state level, but on a federal level, to be able to talk to Canada, that it will make a difference. But I want to make sure that our waters are definitely protected.
Thank you very much. So, moving along a bit, in listening to other meetings that you have had, Representative and Candidate Becker, a point that's been brought up is in the context of non-discrimination measures proposed in Ketchikan in terms of economic redevelopment after the COVID-19 crisis is this point of coming together, united we stand, divided we fall. And I found that point a little interesting in light of some campaign flyers I saw from your campaign candidate Becker earlier today. And I'm wondering where you stand on the issue of negative campaigning.
Well, I believe that my, you know, my campaign is pretty aggressive, and I'm going out after some things that I'm concerned about. And I don't know, I stand on things that I've vetted, and I'm concerned about where the legislature, our current incumbent, has been legislating on our behalf for District 36.
Representative Ortiz, would you like to respond to these, the claims that candidate Becker says are vetted about caucusing with Democrats, supporting higher taxes to balloon the size of government, creating new taxes on working families and businesses, redirecting the permanent fund dividend to the tax and spend politicians, et cetera?
Absolutely. First of all, I'd like to think, and it's certainly been my experience in my 6 years of running, that here in Southeast Alaska, we can expect a little bit more. We can expect that candidates run based on their qualifications, based on what they have to offer for their potential constituents, rather than tearing down and using not only negative advertising, but frankly, false advertising, absolutely false advertising, and then misleading advertising as well. You know, I've never done that. I've never used that against any of my previous candidates, and I have not used that against Leslie Becker as well. Mrs. Becker, I'm sorry, as well. I just won't go there. I just do not see a place for it. Yeah, I'm disappointed. I am disappointed because not only is it negative, but again, it's false. It's not true. The budget, since I have been in office, has not grown. It has been decreased, at least by, when you talk about total government spend, at least by $2 billion. I believe I can make the case for as much as $2.5 billion, which is close to 25% of total government spend. So it's just not accurate that the government has expanded under my watch. It has only gone down. And so that's a classic example of not just negative advertising, but false advertising. Thank you.
Candidate Becker, would you like to respond?
Yeah, it's absolutely true that the PFD is being redirected from the pockets of the citizens of the state of Alaska into the operating budget of the state. The state statute is 43.23.025. That is the formula that applies, that, and I believe in the rule of law. That law is on the books. That is being absolutely denied, avoided, and worked around. That is illegal, immoral, and unethical in my mind. So there has been a redirection of the PFD into the taxes, into the spending of the operational budget. That's an increase in taxes to working families, because basically that is a regressive tax on our lowest economic level in the state of Alaska. And basically it's expanding government. I talked to an economist today who is involved in the budget of the state of Alaska, and we really have not reduced the budget, as Representative Ortiz says. You may look at it as a roll-up, but we're not doing anything on our operational expenses. It's approximately, since he's been incumbent, there has been approximately a 10% reduction in department spending. Most of the reduction in the budget has been applied from the capital expenditures. So we can play a shell game all we want, but the truth of the matter is we're not going in the direction that we need to go, and we're looking at about a 4% growth year over year. So there's a lot of shell game going on, and it's a lot of detail, and the people that are listening right now may or may not understand all of that, but I stand on the fact that our budget is not going in the direction that it needs to be going. We do not have responsible spending, and I do not believe the permanent fund dividend should be redirected into the operations budget. We need to stand on the rule of law, and that's how I will operate as a legislature. If there's a law on the books, I will apply it, and if it cannot be applied, we will have meaningful discussion and make it either change it or repeal it, but I'm not going to pursue a workaround and not be transparent to the voters, period.
Thank you, candidate Becker, Representative Ortez. Anything else to say?
So are we going to talk about the PFD sometime later, or is this our opportunity to talk about the decisions that the Republican majority in the Senate and the bipartisan majority in the House took in relationship to the permanent fund and SB 26, as well as the original statute?
Is that a question to me? I do hope to talk a bit about the permanent fund in a couple of minutes, if that's all right. But if you want to talk about it now, we can also talk about it now.
Well, I would just say that it's absolutely false, absolutely, that the budget has gone up or we've increased government spend since I've been in office. That is just categorically false. And that's the second point on one of those flyers that states that the budget has grown during my particular tenure in office. That's just false. And it's an example of not only negative campaigning, but false campaigning. And I think both the faith that Leslie Becker and I share, there's no room for condoning that kind of thing. There just isn't. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay, candidate Becker, anything else?
No, I just stand on, you know, these are facts. I vetted them. I speak to the economist. I speak to the legislatures. I've spoke to the governor today about this. You know, this is not, I'm not falsely advertising. I'm calling a spade a spade. There's a shell game going on and we need to get to the bottom of it.
All right. We're getting pretty close to the end, so I want to do a little lightning round about ballot measures on the ballot and then talk about the budget, PFD, and revenue, because those I think are some big issues that both of you run on and speak about as well. So I will ask candidate Becker first, do you support ballot measure one, increasing oil production taxes?
Unequivocally, no, I do not support it because it is another tax on the oil industries that sends a very bad message. Right now, the oil producers have multiple line items of taxation that they are paying in an additional to the direct per barrel price taxation. So when we talk about doing this to our partners, we are sending a bait and switch message to our partners. We need economic partners in the state of Alaska. And if we are going to send this message to the incumbent producers, why would there be an incentive for anyone else to come to Alaska and to help us bring our natural resources to the surface? I think it is a very bad decision to pursue this, and I don't believe that we will have a good result of that. I think it's called killing the goose that lays the golden egg.
Do you support ballot measure two, making changes to Alaska's election policies, including requiring contributions to be more clear and creating a ranked choice voting system?
Well, it's very interesting to me that all the money for that initiative has come from outside the state. And I don't believe it'll make anything clearer. I think it's going to make chaos. I have voted in these systems in California. I am not a supporter of it at all. Confusion, confusion, confusion. And, you know, if you have five people running and you don't rank each individual one of them, and your number one person does not win by 50%, 1% of the vote, if you haven't ranked the remaining four candidates, your vote, your ballot gets thrown out. So basically, you're negated. I think it's confusing. I think it's corrupt, and I do not support it.
Representative Ortez, do you support ballot measure one, increasing oil production taxes?
So we're not in a lightning round. We're just go ahead and talk about this at length here.
I was intending it to be a lightning round, but I didn't want to interrupt.
Okay. Yes, I am a supporter of ballot measure one. And here's why. As a member of the House Finance Committee, we hear testimony from oil companies as to production predictions, profit things, things that are very real. So I am very much aware of the situation as it exists for oil companies in the state of Alaska. give you a specific example. In 1 year ago, in 2019, ConocoPhillips reported that the most profitable place for them to do business in the world, because they do business around the world, was the state of Alaska. And that is a good thing. It's good. Businesses are in the business of making profit. I've got no problem with that. However, I can then only assume, because that, for some reason, ConocoPhillips is the only state it's the only company that has to report as to what their earnings are from region to region, or from regime, as they're called, to regime. And so with that amount of information, I can only assume that other oil companies find the state of Alaska to do a good place to do business, that they operate in many places where the tax take is a lot higher, and yet they operate because it's still profitable for them to do that. Now, there's no question that right now the oil industry is struggling with prices at about $40. That's for sure. But most expectation is that eventually there'll be some recovery of those prices. And here's the thing. When a company decides to whether or not they're going to expand their production, it's been, after my experience of looking at the issue, it's not about the particular tax regime that they're in. It's about where the price of oil is and where worldwide demand and supply are going.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And in Alaska, we have good rocks and we have still good reserves up there. And I can pretty much guarantee you that price starts to climb back up to $70 a barrel. If we make a change due to the ballot initiative, if it does pass, they'll be producing that oil because it's profitable for them to do that. And again, that's a good thing. So yes, I'm in support of ballot measure one, because we in the state of Alaska are the resource owners of all of our natural resources, including oil.
Thank you.
As such, we have a right to a fair share. And under ACES, which was the law about 7 or 8 years ago, we were getting a fair share. Then there was a reform called the More Alaska Production Act. And that was up to the voters as well, and it narrowly passed. But frankly, that put oil companies in a much better situation for profits. But then the opportunity cost of that was going to the state of Alaska. So mm-hmm. As we are looking for solutions to our budget issues, including being able to put out PFDs and things like that in the future, I just think that the oil industry can shift back a little bit and contribute a little bit more and still be very profitable and very much interested in doing business in Alaska in the future. So that's why I support it.
Thank you, Representative Vertez. That was a little bit longer than Candidate Becker's answer. So briefly, do you also support ballot measure two, changing the election policies, requiring clarity in contributions more over $2,000 and establishing ranked choice voting?
Yes. Very briefly, for those reasons. I would like to have access in a primary election to everybody on the ballot. Right now, if I'm a Democrat, which I'm not, but if I'm Republican or Democrat, I would like to have access to all the candidates on the ballot. I would like to be able to choose. My first choice might be a Republican, might be an independent, might be somebody else. So I would like to have access to that. Plus, if this initiative passes, again, where money comes from is an important thing for people to know, to bring light and to shed light as to who's backing who, what independent expenditures are going in what direction. That's another change, positive change, that would be a result if we adopted ballot measure number two. So I'm enough. I've already spoken too much. But yes, I support it.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Candidate Becker, do you have a response?
I would just like to call Mr. Ortiz out on saying that he's not a Democrat. He may not be registered as undeclared, but he votes with the Democrats over 95% of the time. So that's just doesn't hold water with me.
Well, thank you, Leslie. However, I was registered as a Republican for most of my life, Republican moderate for a short period of life, 8 months in my life as a Democrat, and then for the last 8 years at least as an independent again. So the facts are the facts. I am an independent, always have been. And yeah, I do meet with a bipartisan majority, which this last session included 6 Republicans. So I don't just meet with Democrats. I don't just caucus with Democrats. I caucus in a bipartisan majority. And my voting record is 100% in line with our senator, Republican senator, Senator Bert Stedman, in this last legislative session, and 96% in the year previous to that. So you can say what you want, Mrs. Becker, but the facts are the facts. And unless you're calling Republican Senator Bert Stedman a Democrat, the fact that my voting record matched his 100% in this last legislative year, the facts are the facts.
May I respond?
You may respond. I also want to ask you both, we are getting to the end of our hour. If you're available to stay for a little bit longer, we can make that work and talk a little bit more about budget, PFD, and these issues of caucusing. But if you need to leave, I do understand, and we can wrap this up.
Fine with me. When I spoke to Bert Stedman about your voting record, he said, oh, that's interesting because we only do one vote together. I'm in the Senate, he's in the House. And it was on the budget. So, you know, I don't know, Dan. It's just very confusing to me, but I don't see a consistency as being independent. Thank you.
Candidate Becker, I did want to ask, if you were elected to the House, would you caucus with the bipartisan coalition, or would you caucus with the Republican caucus?
Well, first of all, there's going to be a massive flip in the House. It's already been proven out in the primary. So let's see who gets elected and what that constituency looks like. But here's for me, I will not join a binding caucus. I will not commit my vote for 2 years ahead of time. I will pursue every vote and vet out the issues and vote according to what is best for my district. So that would be my position about that. But I think it's too soon to say whether you'll join one group or another. But I do not believe in the binding caucus. And I do believe you have to work across the aisles and come to a resolution on all issues. And you're not going to get 100%. But caucusing is a healthy thing. I have caucused all my life in business. And you need to work with different groups and to be able to come to solutions. So I don't have any problem with caucusing, but I will not be bound and I will not sell my vote.
Representative Ortez, would you rejoin a bipartisan coalition?
Absolutely. I expect it to be a bipartisan majority if I'm elected and other independents, et cetera, get elected. I believe we'll have a bipartisan majority. Is a guaranteed thing? No. Would I join a primarily Republican majority? I would. And I think I'll have the opportunity. If I'm elected, I think I will have an opportunity to do that as well. Interesting, though, that Mrs. Becker is not going to join a binding caucus. You know, the thing about a binding caucus is it's only binding on one thing. It's binding on the vote, the final vote on the budget. And it's my understanding that if the Republicans do take control of the House, that one of the people who's likely to be a speaker has said publicly that, yeah, we're going to have a binding caucus on the budget. And so I'm wondering whether or not Mrs. Becker will hold to her pledge not to join a binding caucus, which would then not make her a part of Republican majority, even though the Republicans might be in the majority. So that would be interesting, and particularly it would be concerning for our district if we had a member not joining a majority when they could. It would be hard to protect our interests if that was the decision you'd make.
I would like to talk a bit about, I'll give you a chance to respond, Candidate Becker, but I would like to talk a bit about the two pledges, ideas, documents that Leslie Becker signed from a group called Rhino Safari, Rhino meaning Republican in name only, one of them being the supporting the elimination of the binding caucus, the other supporting following the law regarding PFD distribution, and I'll quote this, additionally, any portion of the PFD which has been withheld needs to be returned to its rightful, oh, there's no T, which is we the people of Alaska. So those two documents were signed by Ms. Becker. And so I would like to talk a bit about both the, I'll let you respond to the binding caucus, but then move on also to the permanent fund and talk a bit about permanent fund distribution since we were talking about that a bit earlier. Candidate Becker.
Okay, so the only thing I have to say about the binding caucus is it's yet to be seen who will be in the House. So as I said before, I will caucus with people and I will vote to represent my district. And beyond that, I'm not making any commitments to anything. If you'd like to talk about this document and what was signed here, yes, absolutely, I stand on this. As a candidate for the office, I support following the law. I believe in the rule of law. That's the backbone of who I am. I don't sell my vote. I believe in the rule of law. And the state statute is 43.23.025. It's the payment calculation. And I believe it is a violation of the law not to pay the full amount. So I think we need to have this protected in the Constitution. And, you know, I'm very adamant about it. And if there is a way to, you know, here we are, we've had the worst economic year on record probably for since statehood with this shutdown, government forced shutdown. And we have not been able to release the permanent fund to our constituents. That is a tragedy to me. We have impacted our economy dramatically by that. Now, there is, you know, Representative Ortiz will say, if we were to pay that, it'll hit the account $300 million a year that'll never be recovered. Well, you know, we have a permanent fund corporation that is a wise investor, and we have very good returns on our fund. So I am not going to live in fear that if we need to make some pass-through of some dollars that are actually due by law to our constituents to help them out in this economic time, I would rather do that and get that money in their hands so they are less dependent on government and more dependent on the on this permanent fund that belongs to the people. So I really believe in the rule of law, and I will fight for that. And if we can't deal with it, we have to have a very meaningful session and get it resolved. But right now we're dealing a workaround, and I think that's a violation.
So you don't find any kind of a imbalance between your desire to right-size the government, as you say, and we'll talk a bit about budget and revenue in just a minute, but between right-sizing the government and cutting spending and supporting a full PFD, and even as this document does say, returning any portion of the PFD that hasn't been paid back to, you don't find that there's an imbalance there?
No, here's the deal, that we have to vet through the budget. We have to look at our spending. We need to have performance-based spending allowed for different departments. The way the state of Alaska has been running the budget is not, it's not responsible. And we need to make some changes in those areas. That means we have to have meaningful discussions across with all the departments. So yes, we've got, but here's the thing. If this has been the rule of law for all these years, why are we not protecting the rule of law? And if there is a way for us to look at how we can refund a portion or all of those dollars, then we need to do that. That was proposed by the governor when he went into office, and it was phased out over a period of time so those funds could be restored to people. It was not going to be one huge drawdown. It was going to be done in incremental increments of time. So I am willing to look at this from all sides to see, is there some way we can get the money to the people, how we can restore the confidence of the people that the legislatures are following the rule of law? I'm passionate about it. So, but I'm also willing to have a conversation. So there's nothing wrong with making a statement to say, I believe in the rule of law, and I'm willing to fight for this, and I'm willing to sit down and have a conversation to figure out how we can get through this.
Thank you, Candidate Becker. So Representative Ortiz, do you support paying a full PFD? Do you support paying back PFD? Where do you fall on the permanent fund dividend?
From the beginning of my service in the legislature, I have always been for distributing a PFD that is fiscally responsible and that does not jeopardize our future generations' ability to have a PFD. That we don't start issuing what is admittedly a politically popular idea. If somebody came up to me and said, hey, I would like to give you $6,000, which is what the amount would be, it would actually be over $6,000 if we were to follow through with the document that Mrs. Becker signed, which called for not only the statutory PFD, but also for all previous monies that were not distributed in previous years when we didn't follow the statute. However, what that would do then, if somebody were to pay all Alaskans $6,000, it would cost $4.5 billion. Where is that money gonna come from? I don't think it would come from completely abolishing the education budget, which is would only get you a quarter of the way there, because it's about $1.3 billion. So where would the money come from? It would come from the principal of the permanent fund. Not the principal, but it would come from the earnings reserve portion of the permanent fund. That is then $4.5 billion that is taken out of the permanent fund. And while, yes, I agree with Mrs. Becker that the permanent fund division does manage their resources well and they have a great investment record, but you're still, no matter what, you're taking that money out of the fund. And so therefore that money is no longer making those fabulous returns. It's just not. And so economists across the board have said, conservatively, it would cost forever more, $300 million a year, conservatively. And not only that, but it would lessen the value of the 5% draw because you'd be drawing on less total value. And so therefore, we would no longer be getting $3 billion a year from the draw. We'd be getting something less than that because you're drawing on a fund that is less value. So it would hurt us in so many ways. It's just not fiscally responsible. It sounds good, but it's just not being fiscally responsible. And our paramount job as legislators is to push forward policies that do not jeopardize our future. So unequivocally, while I would like to, I myself, you know, it'd be nice. It's just not the fiscally responsible thing to do.
Candidate Becker, do you have a response?
I stand on what I've already said. The rule of the law is the rule of law, and I will not equivocate from the rule of law. And we need to get this fixed.
Representative Ortiz.
Can I just have one more point? You know, here's the thing. SB 26 created a law. It was a law. And what that law did was it set in statute that we would draw no more than 5% from the value of the permanent fund to pay for a dividend and to pay for government services. So this past year, we paid out a dividend that was just short of $1,000. And it cost the state about $700 million. It was a good thing that we did that. But what that then did was it also created money to cover our constitutionally mandated obligations. It's a constitutional mandate that we adequately fund education. It's a constitutional mandate that we manage our fish resources to the maximum sustainable yield. So if we wouldn't have done that, if we wouldn't have had the $2.3 billion left over, we wouldn't have been able to follow the law and the Constitution by adequately funding education, by doing other constitutionally mandated things that are required of us. So, I'm in support of following the law for sure. But the reality is, and sometimes as legislature takes actions, they're the rule makers, they're the lawmakers. Sometimes things move forward so that we have conflicting statutes. And our Republican majority voted for that. Bert Stedman voted for that, as well as the bipartisan majority. And we did so because we were acting in the best interest of the state of Alaska in helping us maintain what our constitutional obligations were. And I don't apologize for it.
Candidate Becker, a brief response.
Until we get this budget looked at and audited, this is not going to get resolved. We have out of control spending in legislatures that are allowing this permanent fund dividend funds to go into the operating budget, and we have to get that corrected.
Okay, so speaking of budget, is there anything left to cut in Alaska's budget? And if there is, specific places you can see to cut Alaska's budget, if there are places you see that the state could cut, can we solve Alaska's budget crisis by cutting the budget? That's the whole question. I will ask Representative Ortiz first.
The answer is no. We cannot solve our budget issues by making cuts alone. We just can't. There's no way. Every economist that has spoken on the issue would say that. You cannot cut your way to prosperity. That's just the way it is. Let me give you an example. We have significantly cut the budget, but we do spend $1.3 billion a year on education. We do that. We also spend a little over $1 billion on the Health and Human Services budget. Those are the two biggest drivers right now of our budget. The other departments have all been slashed by at least 20%. All the other agencies have been slashed by at least 20%. What are you going to do? Especially if you're not going to use earnings from part of the 5% money to pay for government services. That's right there about $2.3 billion. If you're not going to use that, you just can't do it. There's just absolutely no way. So while we will continue to find efficiencies, and I will work hard to try to find efficiencies, we're not going to be able to solve the problem by budget cuts alone. It's just that simple.
Ms. Becker?
So you're right, quite right. I agree with that. We're not going to cut our way to prosperity. That's not going to happen. But there are operational efficiencies that can be realized. This is something that I've done repeatedly with mergers and acquisitions and business transactions for large corporations. There's always opportunity. And in my vetting this out across different legislatures and et cetera, I can just see a few things right now. There's an opportunity to look at education. We have a huge administrative burden on our education budget. Where are the operational efficiencies where we can consolidate some of these district expenses into one operating resource, kind of create a hub and spoke support for some of our school districts? We have 53 school districts in the state of Alaska. There are models that are being pilots that are being run right now in Cordova, where they brought four different districts together and run the administrative efficiencies under one office. What have they done with that? They've taken the money from that and put it back into the classroom and into the teacher salary. So those are things that everybody's got to look at. Every department needs to be held accountable to some kind of performance outcomes. We have to look at those things. That's good way to be responsibly managing our state budget. You know, our state does not make money. We take money, and we have to take it through taxation. So we have to be more responsible because we haven't personally made that money. Somebody else gave that to us through taxation. So it's very easy to be lazy and not managing tightly how those dollars are appropriated. So we need to look at the operational efficiencies in education. That's an area. And I do believe that our administrators would work with us to get that done. And it's nice to know that there's already a pilot that we can look at to bring forward. So that's one thing. The second thing is Health and Human Services is a huge expense. We have had Medicaid expansion in the state of Alaska. I wouldn't have ever agreed with that, but it is here. So what happened during Obamacare, that Obama cut the purposely underfunded Indian Health Services and the VA, Indian Health Services by 44%, the Veterans Administration by 17%. So what happened, that burden of unfunded benefits got shifted back to the state of Alaska. Well, Indian Health Services is a treaty under Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. That is part of that treaty. And this that burden, I want them to be fully funded and to be able to operate and support the needs of Indian Health Services. That is 100% in my heart, and I will fight to do that. But we need to get that back to the federal budget. So that has not been shifted to Alaska. The original enrollment was projected to be 11,000 people. There are 80,000 people on Medicaid that are between Indian Health Services and the VA. This is something we can fix and shift that burden back out so that Department of Health and Human Services area is not so overstressed. I want the services to be there, but how are we going to use those dollars? So those are a couple of things that have been pointed out to me recently that we can look at. And I'm also a big one that I believe in outcomes, not emotion, in making decisions on how you fund different administrations. So it's time to kind of shake things out and audit things. Audits are very effective and helpful because they come from independent parties, and they come in and they show, what's the mission statement of an administration? Is that a mission statement being adhered to? Or has it gotten off 1, 2, 3, 10, 15, 20, 45 degrees from what its mission is? And you have all this growth and expansion and how you're paying for that different that administration. This is all responsible government. We need to be doing those kinds of things. So no, we're not going to cut our way all the way there. And there may be a need for taxation. But before we do that, I would hope our legislature would make the commitment to the voters, the people of Alaska, that we're going to be responsible and be looking at every area of opportunity where we can right-size things and be held more accountable to how we spend money. This is third-party money. It doesn't hurt us personally, but we need to be more accountable for how we are managing that, so the burden is not passed back to the pockets of our private businesses and our private workers in this state. That's just not right. That's not good government.
Thank you, Candidate Becker. I will give you, Representative Ortiz, a chance to respond, but I did just want to follow up with one thing you'd said, Ms. Becker, which is the hub and spoke idea, finding efficiencies in the state government. I'm wondering if that extends to places like Wrangell, where all of the services, as we talked about at the beginning of this forum, the Fish and Game Office, our public health nurse, Office of Children's Services workers, those are kind of functioning under this hub and spoke model that you spoke about. And I'm wondering if that's what you're envisioning, that smaller communities will, like Wrangell has, lose those services and have them not be full-time anymore and have them be centered in another area, or if you were speaking about something else.
When I talked about hub and spoke earlier, I was talking about hub and spoke for the ferry system. So we would have a backbone ferry system and a supply chain support that possibly could be corrected with a model where we could have a public-private partnership. Wrangell needs the support services of Fish and Game, public health, all of those areas. And like Representative Ortiz has already talked about, he's co-sponsored legislation to move forward in those things. Those are things that I would totally support, because Wrangell is a population that needs to be supported. So I wouldn't be looking at that. I'm just looking at how we can best manage the outcomes and how we are appropriating money. What's the expectation of the different administrations, and how are we going to manage those funds most correctly?
Okay, Representative Ortiz.
Repeat the question, please.
So the question is about the budget. Can we cut our way to a right-sized budget, as Candidate Becker says? Is there anything else left to cut? If there is, what is it, and where else would you find the money? Well, I guess we'll get into that. I planned on getting into that in a little bit.
So I did answer that. I did have the first crack at that question. I would only like to add that, I would like to ask Mrs. Becker a question in the sense of, you know, if we were to consolidate some school districts, if we were to follow that down road, do you have any idea what kind of money we potentially could save, what kind of actual revenue? So that's just a question for you to think a little bit about. And then you talk about the healthcare efficiencies. I'd like to know how much money you think we might be able to save in those particular areas. But here's the thing. To say that, you know, people are not being impacted by reductions in the budget, that is just not even close to reality. When the Pioneer Home residents had their rates increased significantly, that was very real to them. They were on fixed incomes. They were finding it difficult to have the Pioneer home remain affordable. So that's why I was proud to co-sponsor a bill which lowered those rates back down again, made them more in line with real cost of living increases rather than this massive rate increase. And people were scared. It was real. If you're a ferry worker that has lost your job because of the cutbacks in funding for the Marine Highway System, that's real. That's real money that's no longer there circulating the economy. Again, I'll stand on over my time in office, there are 4,900 less state workers working. At least at one point in time, there were 4,900 less workers, actual working. We're not talking about positions unfilled, actual working people that no longer had jobs. And therefore, their money wasn't in the economy. Their impact in local spending was felt across the board. So it's really not accurate to say that nobody feels the budget cuts because we don't have a direct, we don't pay a direct income tax or a direct sales tax in the state of Alaska. Believe me, people feel it. And, while I'm in office, we're going to have to continue to make tough decisions, but I'm always going to be a proponent for the state to meet its obligations and for the state to fund essential services. That's just the way it is.
Thank you.
So that's all I have.
So speaking of taxes, the final thing I want to talk about briefly is, and I know that this isn't necessarily something that should be a brief discussion, but I'm trying to wrap us up by 7:30 now. Revenue proposals and possible timelines for ways to build Alaska's revenue, because it doesn't seem like either of you are proposing that without any resources we can balance Alaska's budget. So I'll start with candidate Becker. What are you looking to try and raise Alaska's revenue, and what are the timelines for those proposals, whether it's investing in natural resources or taxes or whatever else you might propose?
Well, if we do go the taxation route, it's going to be a couple of years before we actually realize anything meaningful, because you have to set it up, get it in place, and the cost of the operational administration of taxation, which isn't, going to be an additional budgetary burden. But here's the thing: there is no immediate fix on revenue. I understand that there is more oil available to be put into the pipeline, which would help in taxation. So that's something I'm learning about. I don't have a total handle on all of that right now, but I understand there's quite a significant amount of more oil available to put into the pipeline. That would definitely help. I don't know the timing of that being reality, but it's already, ready to go. It just needs to be, the capital structure has to be put in place to actually get it into the pipeline. Mining, I believe, is ramping up in Southeast Alaska. What that will equate to financially, I don't have a hard number on that. But these are all things that we need to continue to, support and work and minimize the entry barriers to entry for any industry, so they are not strangled by any kind of regulatory issues, because we need, time is of the essence, and we need to move these things forward as quickly as possible.
Representative Ortez?
Well, I am certainly for expanding economic opportunities and economic growth. I'm excited about the potential for job creation in mariculture. I believe that there is outstanding potential if the state can help facilitate and be a co-player in creating the framework so that mariculture can take off here in coastal Alaska. And again, it's an exciting opportunity, create year-round jobs, create products that the demand will always be there for. I'm excited about that. So I'm excited about the potential of growing our economy that way. You know, the question originally was about new revenues. You know, the discussion will have to be there. You know, it has been there. I think it's even more paramount now that we've spent down our savings over the last 10 years or so. I think we've spent about $15 billion out of the CBR. And so now that option is not there. So how we're going to meet our next year's fiscal obligations, you know, we're going to have to discuss options out there. What, you know, what will happen if ballot initiative one does pass? You know, will that create more revenue? It will. But Leslie's right, will not do that immediately. But these are all things that are going to have to be discussed, and they're tough discussions, and they require people who are willing to make tough decisions, politically unpopular decisions. And that's, you know, that's just the job of being a legislator. So, I don't have much more to add on that.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anything you'd want to add, Candidate Becker?
No, thank you.
Okay, so then I will ask you, since we started with Representative Ortez, we will have you first. If you have anything else you'd want to say to the people of Wrangell about your candidacy for House District 36, Representative Ortez, and then we'll go to Candidate Becker.
Yes, thank you. I would like to close by offering the residents of Wrangell and all KSDK listeners a vision for the future, what I see for a future of Southern Southeast Alaska. A future where we rebuild our universities so we have affordable degrees, where we can train our nurses, our engineers, our teachers, our biologists, so that people will have the ability to live and love and stay in Alaska and want to stay here. Not just our universities, but our tech programs as well, so that we can raise workers, so that we can train workers to have good wage earning careers, to fill these positions in our industries that are so important to us here in Alaska. A future where, frankly, our native communities are thriving, where languages have been preserved. Imagine the impact of native speakers growing out of this next generation of Native Alaskans. A future where the arts are vibrant and our recreation remains exceptional. A future where salmon runs return in robust fashion and they're sustainable. Mm-hmm. And we have a thriving mariculture industry that provides good paying year-round jobs. A future where the norm is civil political discourse, where candidates for office campaign solely on their positive merits and don't look to gain by tearing down their opponents with negative and false misleading advertising. And there's an exception, the expectation of elected lawmakers to collaborate unceasingly for the good of future generations. I stand by my record as a representative devoted to serving all the residents of Southeast Alaska. I've lived the economies of our region as a student. Local Ketchikan Pulp Company, as I mentioned earlier, got me through college. As a coach, the ferries were crucial for our team travel. And as a parent of young Alaskans, I want to act responsibly and preserve the permanent fund for future generations to come. I have worked tirelessly for District 36 while gaining experience and seniority in the legislature. As the vice chair of House Finance, I fight for our unique coastal Alaskan lifestyles and industries. Yes, I'm asking for your vote for a candidate who has invested in Alaska for life and who was a representative who delivered for the community of Wrangell and all of District 36. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Ortez. Candidate Leslie Becker.
Yeah, hi. So before I start, I just want to let everyone know that I will be in Wrangell this Sunday. I'll be at the Stikine Inn from 12:30 to 2:30. So if you have additional questions, sure, I would be welcome an opportunity to meet you and talk to you and continue this discussion. So thank you for the opportunity to share that. I just want to let you know that I'm a very conservative candidate and I'm extremely focused on fiscal responsibility. I've lived in Ketchikan for 4 years and have engaged in the community. I've served as an appointed and elected member of the Ketchikan Gateway School Board. I am known and I'm trusted. I am passionate about righteousness and good government. Government is here to serve the people. And I am running for office because I don't see strong representation in our current Alaska legislature. I want to see a better future for our children's children. For me, decisions are made only after I have dug into an issue and debated it from every side, but every decision has to be number one, moral, number two, legal, and number three, ethical. I believe in the rule of law and I will follow the law. If a law is no longer applicable, it is incumbent on the legislature to change it, not to make a new law to do a workaround. My vote is not for sale. I strongly believe our state spending needs to be reduced and a spending cap implemented. Each department or agency should be held accountable to performance and outcomes expectations. As your representative, I will continue working closely throughout each community to ensure their concerns are being heard and their resolutions are being pursued. I believe that picking a representative is similar to picking a mechanic. The question to the voter is, are you going to send back the same mechanic who for 6 years has not presented legislation that will reduce operational expenses to the state? Or are you going to send a new mechanic who is willing to get under the hood and make changes? I respectfully ask for your vote for Leslie Becker on November 3rd, and I thank you all for the opportunity to communicate with you tonight through this forum.
Thank you both very much for your time this evening, and thank you for staying on a bit longer so we could have a deeper discussion about the issues. You've been listening to independent Ketchikan-based incumbent Representative Dan Ortez, who represents Alaska House District 36, and his challenger, Ketchikan Republican Leslie Becker. Rangel, thank you very much for tuning in to KSDK's Candidate Forum for Alaska House District 36. Have a great night, everybody.